Welcome to this afternoon's Lead for Literacy Center's webinar on promoting code-based literacy skills in elementary schools. At this time, I'd like to introduce Dr. Gracie Branch, NAESP's Professional Learning Associate Executive Director. Hi, Gracie.
Hi, Honor, and thank you. We're excited for everyone to be with us today. We have a great partnership with the Lead for Literacy Center, and I have the honor of introducing our two great presenters today. First, we have Jess Searles. Jess is a technical assistance coach for the Lead for Literacy Center at the Center on Teaching and Learning at the University of Oregon. Our next presenter is Dr. Lauren Artsy, who is a technical assistance coach for the Lead for Literacy Center and senior researcher at the American Institute for Research. Welcome, Jess and Lauren, and I'll turn the program over to you.
Great. Thank you so much, and thank you to NAESP for having us come and talk about considerations for instruction and what school leaders can do to support instruction in their school. Today, we will be focused on the code-based skills to support children in their word recognition. Before we begin, I want to recognize that we're a technical assistance and dissemination center, the Lead for Literacy Center, and we are in a partnership with a number of organizations that you see on the screen, the Center on Teaching and Learning, American Institutes for Research, NAESP, WETA, and the Meadows Center at the University of Texas. This is part of a larger series that we've been doing this year in partnership with NAESP. We've been discussing important issues for school leaders related to reading instruction within multi-tiered structures. And we have a number of sessions that we've been doing related to assessment considerations for schools and school leaders, as well as overviewing important components of professional learning and a framework that the Lead for Literacy Center has developed to support school leaders in supporting their schools and implementing a school-wide reading model within tiered structures. All of these sessions are recorded and archived on NAESP's website, as well as the Lead for Literacy website. And you can find the PowerPoint materials as well as all of the additional worksheets and materials. Today's session is focused on code-based literacy skill, and we'll have another related session next week that focuses on evidence-based practices and tiered systems related to children's supporting their meaning level skills, so reading comprehension, vocabulary, and those types of skills. We'll turn it over to my colleague Jess in a moment, but I just wanted to review some of the session objectives. So today we will focus on code-based instruction, evidence-based practices within tiered structures to support children's code-based skills. And we will show a number of different web resources, open access materials that are available to school leaders and other educators in implementing these evidence-based practices. Related to that, I just wanted to show you the Lead for Literacy website because we have a couple of resources up there. If you go to theleadforliteracy.org, and we'll put the link in the chat in a minute, you'll get to our webpage. We have a framework over here that is related to important components for school leaders to support their schools in implementing a school-wide reading model within multi-tiered systems of support. And there's a number of different tools. So for instance, there's a framework navigator that school leaders can use with their staff to essentially take an informal kind of inventory of what's in place, what might be good areas to set action goals around, things like that. We also have a number of what we call literacy leadership briefs, and there's a couple in the handouts that you received. There are many related to evidence-based practices and recommendations from the What Works Clearinghouse and other organizations. And then we also have a resource repository on the website where you can search by framework component and resource type, and we have a number of different resources that we've curated related to, like, for instance, professional learning modules, videos, resources to support lesson planning. And I also just wanted to briefly show you the handouts that you received for today. Along with the PowerPoint slides, there's also a handout packet of note-taking pages. If you would like to take notes, we also attach some of the infographics. So one infographic that outlines the Lead for Literacy framework and the components of the Lead for Literacy framework. We also partnered with NAESP to write a literacy leadership brief that highlights, again, the framework, but also it highlights a number of different tools such as learning walkthrough, rubrics and resources that school leaders and other educators in the schools can use to understand what practices are being implemented in the classroom. And we have some different briefs. And then we also attached the navigator itself. So you can access that through the website, or it's also attached in your handouts. And then we have some resources, if you scroll all the way to the bottom, related to research-based methods for intensifying intervention to support children in their learning. So those are just some of the resources, and I'll toggle back to our PowerPoint and turn it over to Jess to connect with us on code-based skills. Please feel free to use the chat, put any comments you have in the chat, and you can also use the, Jess will talk through the how to use the question and answer feature as well, and I'll be monitoring both throughout the session.
Awesome. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our session for code-based learning. And thank you to our partners at NAESP and Lauren for getting us kicked off today. We'll go ahead and jump into code-based learning for today and those code-based skills for instruction in those areas. On our website, which Lauren was kind of walking you through pretty quickly at the beginning of the session to kick things off, we do have an indicator on our framework for instruction and intervention, and it is one of the framework elements on our Lead for Literacy website. And within that topic, kind of that frame, but that framework element of instruction and intervention, we have resources on instructional time and allocating time for reading instruction, the quality of reading instruction, instructional adjustments to make according to data to really inform our instruction, and then what is instruction look like in tier one, tier two, and tier three. So some of the resources that we talk through today will be under those topic buttons in our instruction and intervention portion of our website. So just know that there are resources for each of those topic buttons highlighted on the website. For questions and discussion, you do have at kind of the bottom of your Zoom setup, a place where you can use the chat for comments. So if you have comments, I know a lot of you have kind of put in where you're from, so it's nice to see we've got some representation from across the nation. So anytime you have comments to add, or you'll be able to see links coming through that chat box as well, use that for that feature for those comments and to find those links. And then the question and answer button on your platform, use that button for questions, and then someone from the panel will answer questions using that question and answer format. It just helps kind of sort through where questions are housed, so we don't miss questions that are coming through the chat before we have an opportunity to answer them. So if you would please kind of differentiate between those chats for comments and to access the links that we may be sharing, and then those questions and answer format to make sure we do get your questions answered before we end our session together today. And then if you do have any tech issues and things like that, feel free to send a private message to Lauren Artsy via the chat box, and she'll help you kind of figure out that, or if you have questions about where to access things on the website or the handouts. All right, here we go. Let's jump into instruction and intervention within a multi-tiered system of support and reading, or an MTSSR. So looking at the simple view of reading, this is kind of where we're going to launch into our content today. And really the Goff and Turmer in 1986 kind of proposed the simple view of reading to really help clarify the role of decoding in the reading process and as we're teaching students to read. The reason being, often that the coding section, those code-based skills, are sometimes skipped over as we're teaching students to read. Beginning readers or students who are struggling with reading may be taught to compensate for like their weak decoding skills by using cues to guess, or decoding or looking at unfamiliar words just by based on the first letter of the word. And really that's not the skills that successful readers bring to the table when they're reading text. So the simple view of reading was proposed to really highlight the importance of that word recognition and those code-based skills in learning to read. So you'll notice that this equation is set up as a multiplication problem. And the reason being is that if either of these components, word recognition or language comprehension, are zero, then you don't get to reading comprehension because something times zero is always zero. So for example, if a student has very weak or no decoding or those code-based skills, but they're able to comprehend language, they still won't get to reading comprehension because word recognition's at zero. And the opposite is true. If students don't have any language comprehension skills, but their decoding skills are strong, we still don't get that reading comprehension because they're missing that language comprehension piece. So really, as we're looking at the simple view of reading, knowing and acknowledging that reading is this multifaceted skill, and it requires gradual practice and really honing in on word recognition skills and decoding prints, and then also those language comprehension skills and that ability to understand spoken language to really achieve reading comprehension. And it takes lots of practice and lots of instruction in both of those areas to really develop successful reading comprehenders in our classrooms. So then we'll come kind of to the table of this decoding and these code-based skills through a lens of multi-tiered systems of support and reading. Some of you may be familiar with this triangle, but it really is looking at this tiered system of support, with tier one being kind of a universal level of prevention. Tier two is a more targeted level of prevention, and tier three is an intensive level of prevention. Typically, in kind of a healthy multi-tiered system of support, about 80% of our students are going to have their reading needs met in decoding and language comprehension to get to that reading comprehension piece. Often, we'll find a smaller percentage of our students who need additional support in tier two and tier three. Kind of the overarching goals of a multi-tiered system of support is really identifying students who are on track for reading success, which would be our tier one universal level of prevention kids, identifying those students who are on track for reading success, and then keeping them on track. So once we know they're on track, keeping them there. And then after we've identified our tier two and our tier three students who are being served in those areas of prevention, knowing that their reading comprehension and their reading skills aren't on track for reading success, our goal then is to get them on track and then keep them on track through that multi-tiered system of support. And knowing code-based skills are crucial to instruction across tiers of support. So as we're looking at tier one, tier two, and tier three, really ensuring that we're teaching these code-based skills across those tiers. So in our Lead for Literacy framework, we do have five elements that make up that Lead for Literacy framework that contribute to a multi-tiered system of support. We right now in this session are looking at instruction and intervention. We do have an assessment section of the framework, administration, organization, and communication, and standards and priorities and goals. And then you'll see that professional development overlays all of those sections of the framework, really contributing to a strong, healthy system. So looking at quality reading instruction and intervention, and really we're going to focus on that code-based skills part of the equation in this session. We'll look more at the meaning-based skills in our session next week that we hope you can join us for. But as we're looking at quality instruction and intervention, really being central, they're kind of that like bulk, they're the bulk of the goal of what we're doing in a multi-tiered system of support, really offering that quality reading instruction to really make our effective reading system sustainable and efficient for students. So looking at what kind of goes into this process, we do have assessments that are part of the system. They really help us gauge how well our MTSSR is working. And then professional development to support the implementation of effective reading instruction. And then we have administration, organization, and communication that are crucial to the system, really solidifying as a leader what systems are in place, how are we communicating those systems out to everyone so this instruction intervention is as high quality as it could possibly be. And then standards, priorities, and goals that really help us kind of come together around collective goals and a shared effort to improve instruction and intervention in our buildings. And all of that together is really pouring into that instruction and intervention, making sure that it is high quality instruction and intervention across those tiers of prevention for students. And really, that's the main indicator of whether students learn how to read successfully is our instruction and intervention. So everything is, all of our resources are being pulled in and really communicated in an effective way to really provide a solid system for students. So looking at implementation of evidence-based practices, a few things that we'll talk about through this session today, looking at prioritizing reading skills, explicit and systematic delivery of instruction, intensification of instruction, and then the use of data to improve or adjust instruction as needed. So that leads us to, what are the priority reading skills? What should we be teaching to really ensure that high quality instruction and intervention across those tiers of prevention and our multi-tiered system of support? So we are going to focus on this word recognition piece. Again, this is going to be code-based, and you can join us next week for the language comprehension and meaning-based skills. So as we focus in on this word recognition piece, breaking apart these decoding skills, that consists of print concepts. So understanding how print is organized and what the basic print features are as we're teaching students how to read. And then decoding skills also includes phonological awareness, which is an awareness and an understanding of the sounds in spoken words, in syllables, and in sounds. So teaching students how to hear and manipulate those sounds in our language. And then phonics and word recognition. So knowing and applying grade level phonics, those letter sound connections and correspondences, so students can analyze words and decode those words successfully. And then word knowledge, which is sight vocabulary. So this is looking at words that students have kind of stored in their word box that they're able to read with a rate of automaticity to help build comprehension and fluency. And then fluency is kind of the last part of this decoding package, which is looking at accuracy, rate, and expression. So students are reading with sufficient accuracy and fluency and able to support their comprehension of the text that they are reading. We do have a resource here on this slide for additional supports with how to teach these skills and some information and evidence based around these code-based skills, and it is through the IAS Practice Guide on Foundational Skills to Support Reading for Understanding in Kindergarten through Third Grade. There are four recommendations in the practice guide. Three of those really focus on those code-based skills. So our recommendation two is develop an awareness of the segments of sound and speech, that phonological awareness parts of decoding, teaching skills to decode words, analyze word parts, and write and recognize words, which really fits into those phonics and decoding skills. And then the fourth recommendation in this practice guide is ensuring students read connected text every day to support their reading accuracy and fluency, and then also their comprehension, so that fluency bubble on the previous slide that relates to those decoding skills and those code-based skills. So the next part we're going to do, we do know that all of these skills are important to teach, but one really important part of that is to be sure that that instruction is being implemented in the classroom. So really bridging that research and actually getting it into practice. And one way we can do that is through collecting implementation data. And as school leaders, this is something we should be doing in our classrooms, ensuring that the research that we know and the code-based skills that we know need to be taught are actually being taught in classrooms and across classes in our school building. So one tool we can use for that is out of REL or REL. Some of you may have heard of that acronym, but this is a document from the Southeast region of REL. And it is looking at literacy leaders and providing walkthrough tools for kindergarten, first, second, and third grade. So we're going to kind of hone in right now on first grade with this document. So as we jump into this document, we're going to do a little bit of a watch and jot for one section for that first grade rubric. So we're going to look at the code-based skills on this walkthrough rubric as we watch a video teaching code-based skills. So as we're kind of thinking through that implementation data, this is one tool that leaders could use as they're visiting classrooms, either virtually or in person these days, to really think through what's happening with the teacher instruction and what's happening with student learning. So as we watch the video from the next slide, if your last name starts with an A through an M, you'll look at the phonics instruction and the phonemic awareness instruction through a teacher instruction lens. And if your name is N through Z to start your last name, you'll look at the student learning in the video. So looking at how are students learning about phonological awareness? How are students learning about phonics and word recognition? How are students learning about fluency? And then we'll do a share out based on those look fors. So I'm going to zoom this in so you can see it a little closer. For our concepts and phonological awareness, looking for students hearing sounds and words as we're watching this video. So looking at how is the teacher instruction if you're A through M, how are the students learning if you're N through Z about those sounds and language. Then phonics and word recognition, looking for how students are learning about the sounds and those letter-sound relationships. How are they learning to blend words and read words through those sound-spelling relationships? Again, if you're an M, teacher instruction, how is that being taught? If you are N through Z for your last name, how are students learning that information? And then the last part that we'll watch today is fluency. So looking at how are students or how are teachers modeling fluent reading with speed, accuracy, and prosody in the expression? How are students practicing using some decodable text and really practicing those sound spelling and decoding relationships to read text fluently? So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen, and we'll just watch kind of the first 3 minutes of this video that really focuses in on these decoding, these code-based skills. And as you're watching, again, M through Z, you're looking at the teacher instruction for phonics and phonological awareness and fluency. If your name's last name is N through Z, you're looking at what students are doing to learn that information. How are they practicing? How are they getting feedback? How are they learning and really kind of honing their skills for code-based instruction? So here we go. I'll go ahead and share the video so we can see that together.
Okay, here we go.
W-in.
Win.
Am.
Ham.
Edge.
Wedge.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Tricky. Here we go. Ab.
Crab.
Wow. Okay, we're each going to get a turn. D'Angelo. In.
Win.
Josiah. Rig.
Rig.
Wonderful. That was strong. Give yourselves a strong clap. One, two, three. Huh. Nice.
Ready? We're going to practice saying sounds. When I point to the sound, say the sound in your head. When I tap under the sound, you will say the sound out loud. My turn. Sound. I. Sound. E. Your turn. Sound.
I.
Sound.
E.
Oh, wait for the chat. Sound.
E.
Sound.
I.
Sound.
I.
My turn. Sound. I. Your turn. Sound.
I.
Yeah. Ready? Sound.
E.
Sound.
I.
Sound.
I.
Nice job. Let's try some individual turns. I will point next to the sound. I will call one student. Only that student says the sound out loud. Sound. Armando.
I.
Beautiful. Sound. Eric.
I.
Sound. Think about it. Sound. Michaela.
I.
Nice job.
This. In a jet kit.
Go ahead and take a moment. Read this book in a whisper voice to yourself so I can hear you read it. Want it not super in your head whisper. I want to hear it a little bit. So like, kid, kid. That way I can hear you read it. Nicely done. You know what I noticed? I saw a couple kids when they were reading, they stopped and they went back and they blended that word one more time just to make sure that they got that word right. And I think that's really awesome. Maya.
Can he fit in a jet kit?
Ooh, I like the way she read that. That one ended with a question mark, and she said, can he fit in a jet kit? She read it like it was a question. Nice job. Turn the page. Ooh.
Okay, so I'll pause it there, and I'll give you a little bit of time. I'm going to go ahead and share the rubric that we talked through before the video. And I'll invite you to kind of think about what you saw as far as teacher instruction with these areas, if you were A through M. And then what did you see for student learning for that M to Z? So just if you'll share out in the chat box, what are some of those things that you saw as we were watching the video for teacher instruction of phonics, fluency, and phonological awareness? And then what are some of those things that you saw with student learning? What was happening to help students learn about phonics, fluency, and phonological awareness? So I'll pause there and give you a little bit of time to think about that and then enter any thoughts you have in the chat box.
So one comment is that the teacher modeled the sound first.
Mm-hmm. Cues, using the clues on the cubes. Absolutely. Time to think. That one's huge. Yes, Anita. Time for students to think. All students to think.
I think, too, repetition came up, and that's so important with, like, getting additional reinforcements in there for the students.
Absolutely. And pencil to provide pacing. Again, that ties into, like, that student engagement and then also ensuring that think time for students. So nice job picking up on that, Linda. It was a piece of that think time, too. Independent reading to help build that fluency piece. Yeah, you can keep those coming in. But yes, you're exactly right. Lots of modeling, lots of practice, lots of scaffolding through cubes and allowing that think time for all students to respond. And this will feed into very nicely when we talk about how instruction is delivered. So we'll kind of come back to some of these comments during that how instruction was delivered as well. But students do have a model, and then they have group practice, and then they have time for individual checks for understanding by that teacher. So as you're thinking through things and we're going through this, feel free to keep those coming through the chat box, and Lauren and I will keep an eye on that as we move through the remainder of the session today. All right, so looking through a couple of additional resources for code-based instruction. One is through Student Achievement Partners, and it is really about prioritizing instructional content. And we know that with unfinished teaching through the pandemic, and some things that have been taught well and some things that maybe we haven't been able to get to because of interrupted schooling, there is a document that provides some guidance around which, when we have all these things to teach, how do we prioritize which content really needs to be taught per grade level? And it also provides some assessment guidelines and recommendations as well. So really nice document that kind of helps walk through that process, especially as we're kind of wrapping things up for this year, knowing we have a few months left of the school year and then looking toward next year. How can we start prioritizing and continue prioritizing some of this content for code-based skills? And then UFLY, the University of Florida Literacy Institute, has a fantastic website that provides PowerPoint templates and models and videos and samples of all kinds of code-based learning activities, and it's all organized by strand. So if you're not familiar with the UFLY website, I highly encourage you to visit that website, share it with staff and folks in your buildings. If you're from a leadership lens, sharing this out, providing some professional development around some of these activities to really kind of beef up and hone in on those code-based skills with lots of materials that are already provided for you. So now that we've looked at kind of what is code-based instruction and the skills that we're looking for in that code-based instruction, now we're going to shift toward that how of the reading instruction. So how is reading instruction delivered? And that is being just as important as the what of what we are delivering. So, and you all were picking out some of those whats from the video that we were watching with that teacher instruction. So we're going to now shift over more to how we're teaching that reading instruction.
Here we have explicit instruction and systematic instruction. So we're going to dive a little deeper into each of those components in this section. Explicit instruction is stated clearly and in detail, leaving no room for confusion or doubt. Systematic instruction has or shows or involves a system at place, a method or a plan, typically starting from simple to more complex. So we have a plan, we know where we're starting, and we know where we're going to build students' skills and complexity. And then instruction is the act or the practice of teaching. I like to also say the art of teaching. There's definitely an art to it. There's an art of teaching, and there's an art to coaching, there's an art to leading. And as we're working with students, we do bring kind of ourselves to the table in that instruction process. So looking at features of explicit instruction, what does that look like? One part of explicit instruction, we'll kind of dive into the components in this section, is the lesson explanations or the objectives. So these are just really short learning targets. You may have heard them called that as well, but they're providing this really short explanation of what students are practicing. What is the goal of the lesson? What do we want the outcome to be? So you heard in the video, they would say, we're going to practice letter sounds, or we're going to practice reading accurately and fluently. It is a very short, quick explanation so students know exactly what the focus of the lesson or that section of the lesson is. And then models, a lot of you picked those out too in the video, providing that clear model of what we want students to do. What is the task at hand and how do we complete it successfully? And showing students that so they know exactly what's expected out of the instruction. Student participation and engagement. So engaging them in the learning, having them respond multiple times during the lesson, keeping them engaged through appropriate lesson pacing. And you notice the taps in the book and the tap of the pencil to help with that pacing, not at the expense of think time. And a lot of you noted that there was time to think that was built into that pacing. So all students had a chance to think before everyone was asked to respond. Error corrections was part of that lesson. They were infused in, and you saw the teacher's model, my turn, your turn, and give students an additional practice opportunity. So providing corrective feedback, providing positive specific praise to really help motivate and continue the learning for students. And then checks for understanding. So in that sample video, there were little checks or individual turns after each section. How are students doing? Are students mastering the material? Do they need more practice with the material? And really checking in with students frequently throughout the lesson. So we're not teaching like an entire unit and then checking at the end. We're checking frequently throughout each lesson and then altering and refining our instruction based on the feedback we're getting from students. One example out of the foundational skills to support reading and understanding for students K-3. This is one of the recommendations from, or one of the action steps from recommendation 2, which is developing an awareness of the segments of sound and speech and how they link to letters using these tiles for word building. So I'm going to model this one for you really quickly. How can we take an activity out of this practice guide, apply explicit instruction components to it, to help students build their code based skills. So in this activity, you have, I'll give you your explanation. We're going to practice building words. You have tiles F, A, T, C, and N. I'll give you a clue. You type the word that fits the clue in the chat box. When I say enter, when I say show me, press enter. And I'll model the first one for you. My turn. I'm thinking of a word that rhymes with cat. If I replace the k with f, I have a new word. What's the word? My turn, I'll show you. So I'm typing the word in. 3, 2, 1, show me. And I entered, so now you're able to see mine. Now it's your turn. Go ahead and get your chat ready, but don't press enter until I say show me. We have fat, and we're going to change a letter in fat to make it say fan. Don't press enter yet. Change the letter in fat to make it say fan. 3, 2, 1, show me. Nice, nice job with your think time waiting on that before you responded. Next one, your turn. Now change a letter in fan to make it say can. Don't type enter yet. Fan, to make it say can. 3, 2, 1, enter. Can. Excellent. Yes. Nice job waiting for the signal. Next one, and I could keep going through, right? And then providing students with those practice opportunities. Everyone's getting a chance to respond. Everyone's having to think. I could easily add in scaffolds by telling you to change the first letter or to change the last letter as we're walking through this activity, providing you a little more time. If I have all my cameras on in virtual environment, instead of using the chat box, I could have them write on a dry erase board or a tablet and hold it up to show their answers. If I'm in person, I could have them holding up their dry erase boards or their papers that they're writing on to show me their answers. So lots of ways that we can really infuse that think time, that signal, the pacing, and then that opportunity for all students to respond with that corrective feedback and those checks for understanding using activities to build code-based skills. And then what platform am I using for this activity? This is just PowerPoint. So I animated the pieces on the PowerPoint to pop up when I wanted them to. So this is just PowerPoint here. Next one, active engagement and participation. Research does show that increased frequency in student responses does a lot of really cool things when you're instructing. Three of those would be increasing time on task, increasing academic achievement, and increasing the intensity of intervention. So if I have students that are actively engaged and they're actively participating in the lesson, I have this increase in frequency responses, which does these really positive things for students' learning, while also decreasing disruptive behaviors. So it's a win-win. I get more responses, more practice, more intensive instruction, and less disruptive behavior because students are engaged in the learning that's happening. Really important to weave those active participation opportunities into all parts of the lesson. So in my lesson opening, I'm going to have students engaged. Maybe they're repeating the learning objective after me, or they're engaged in something I'm doing in my lesson opening. Then throughout the meat of my lesson, kind of the middle part of my lesson, I'm asking them to say things. I'm asking them to type in the chat box if we're virtual. I'm asking them to hold up things. I'm asking them to act and do some actions during the lesson. And then at the end, engaging them in that lesson conclusion. So there's lots of active participation and practice woven throughout all parts of my lesson. Ways to do that, several different things we can do. We can engage students in verbal responses, like choral responses, partner responses, and discussions, or individuals, like we saw with those checks for understanding in the video. I can have students engage in written responses, whiteboards, response cards, chat box that you just did, and then action responses. They could act out, they could gesture, they could use hand signals or facial expressions. So actively engaging them from the beginning of the lesson to the end of the lesson using multiple ways of engagement through saying things and writing things and doing things throughout the lesson. And regardless of what method I use for that, there's equity in our lessons because we're talking about all students being engaged in the learning. We're providing all students think time so they can actually take part in the learning in our classrooms of all of these code-based skills. We're holding students accountable for participating in the lesson. It does require intentional planning to weave those into your lesson, and then providing feedback to really help me as the instructor adjust my instruction accordingly throughout the lesson. In this example, this is a virtual lesson, and I'll show my screen with you. We're going to just watch really like a 30-second section of the video. And in that 30 seconds, you'll see verbal responses and you'll see action responses. And then following this video toward the end of it, students had a chance to use the SH digraph in written responses. So in this one lesson of this teacher, there were multiple opportunities for writing answers, for saying things by verbally responding, and through doing actions. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen so you can see the verbal and the action part of that. And then it models here in those pictures what that written section looks like following this activity that they're doing in the video that we'll see now.
You are going to practice blending sounds to read words. Sound. Sound.
Eh.
Fish. Everyone make your best fish face. Oh, nice work. Oh, I got a tricky word. Don't let me trick you. Are you?
And then they go into the next word. So in that, like, maybe 10 seconds of video, they had multiple times to practice. They had multiple times to respond, even on a virtual platform. And they were getting feedback from the teacher as she was having them blend those sounds to say the word. And then they had a chance to do a little action with that. They made their fish face before they moved to the next word. So really quick way to infuse some of those verbal and those action responses to keep students engaged in the lesson, whether you're virtual delivery or whether you're in-person delivery. And some of you may be even a hybrid delivery. So you're delivering to both platforms simultaneously. So just thinking through again, really weaving in, how are we getting students to say things? How are we getting students to write things? And how are we getting students to do things throughout the lesson, regardless of our platform of delivery? There are the resource here is looking at active participation and a reference sheet for that. So it is based off of Anita Archer's work. Some of you may be familiar with her. And she is a really big proponent of explicit and systematic instruction. So this resource goes through kind of some just really quick reference sheets of, if I want students to correlatively respond, how can I set that up in the routine? If I want students to use response plate, response boards or whiteboards to hold up their answers like they were doing in the screen right before this, what's kind of a routine that I can put in place for that? So it just gives very clear teacher language, what students do, teacher's language, what students do, to help embed some of those active participation and engagement techniques into your lessons that you're teaching. And then moving on to systematic instruction. So we know explicit instruction is really using those models, using our explanations, using lots of time for students to actively participate and engage in the learning, giving checks for understanding, and providing that corrective feedback. Features of systematic instruction really looks at lessons building on one another. So moving from simple skills to more complex tasks, and then looking at breaking complex skills into smaller, more manageable chunks. So for example, in the lesson that we watched at the beginning of this session, the teacher started with sounds and then moved students reading words and words in connected text. So breaking that big complex task of reading all of these words in a connected text into these smaller subsequent skills that are needed in order to successfully read words and connected text. Prioritizing sequences, tasks from easy to more difficult, and then scaffolding instruction by providing those temporary supports. So giving cues, giving additional think time, giving additional practice, corrective feedback, providing those scaffolds within a lesson. And cubes, which was there too. You all noted the cubes in the video, which would be a scaffold as well, a visual scaffold. So looking at systematic instruction and what this could look like across a code-based lesson to teach those foundational skills, starting really with a sound spelling card. And a lot of core programs in our Tier 1 instruction do come with some sound spelling cards with a picture cue. So that's kind of the more simple task out of this more complex task of reading text. So breaking it into smaller skills, starting with that sound spelling card. Moving to blending and reading words with that sound spelling pattern, reading and writing words with that sound spelling pattern, and then reading decodable text, where we have that connected text using the sound spelling cards and those sound spelling patterns within words to then move into that more complex task of connected text. So we'll take a quick poll here. Thinking about your current implementation or implementation in your building, if you're representing a building as a school leader, what does your current implementation of code-based instruction look like? Do you have systematic and explicit instruction in place in your school building around phonological awareness, phonics and word recognition, and fluency? So one is it's not in place. We don't have explicit and systematic instruction in place for code-based skills. And then moving to two, somewhat in place, three, mostly in place, and four, routinely in place and strongly implemented. So I'll give you just a few seconds to kind of think on this, complete the poll, and then we'll stop for any questions that you may have.
It looks like somewhat in place got the most votes at 45%, followed by mostly in place. Few said not in place, and a few also said routinely in place. And so, and that's one of the things too with the navigator. It asks for school teams to rate, you know, not in place is zero, a bit in place is one, and routinely in place is two. And so sometimes school teams will set action plans related to a goal around something that maybe isn't in place yet that they want to begin implementing, or looking at something that maybe you put in the poll as like somewhat in place that you want to move to mostly in place or routinely. So that's how, schools have used some of these tools.
Thanks, Lauren. If there are any questions that you have, do feel free to type those into that question and answer feature as we go through as well. I don't see any in there yet, but if you do have some of those, feel free to plug those in and we'll make sure we get those answered as we're going through the remainder of our webinar and our time together today.
I got a couple just to myself about resources related to the virtual learning. So I'll also add the UFLY webpage in there, and I put the What Works Clearinghouse, I'll add that again, has some resources on how to consider some of the recommendations from the practice guides in the virtual space. So I'll add
Great.
Those.
Awesome. Thank you, Lauren. All right. We'll go ahead and jump into intervention and intensification. We're not going to spend a ton of time in this section, but I do think it's worth mentioning because we know with students who often have are at risk for reading difficulties, a lot of the time it's in this code-based section of learning, kind of the code-based part of the simple view of reading. So I did want to acknowledge that this is an area where we do have students who may be struggling with learning to read. There may be some times that we do need to add some intensification around these code-based skills. So I did want to at least touch on this and give you some resources to help look at intensifying instruction in this area. So looking at intensifying instruction across tiers of support, the primary purpose is really differentiating reading instruction during core instruction, or that tier one layer, the green part of the triangle we looked at earlier, implementing supplemental reading interventions, that tier two level of prevention, or the yellow on the triangle, and then implementing intensive reading interventions, which is that red top of the triangle for tier three supports. The goal of all of that is to accelerate reading achievement. So as we look at this, you do have quotes here. We're not going to I'm not going to read these off to you, but I did want to include them so you have some access to what the research says about intensification and the importance of intervening early. And that's what this evidence on this slide is about, really intervening as early as we can to help support students in these code-based skills. What does more intensity mean? It means that we're doing more explicit and direct instruction. We're doing more modeling, more practice, more monitoring and feedback, spending more time on instruction of these code-based skills, and collecting more data to really drive and tailor our instruction for students. This is an example on this slide, looking at how that intensity increases across tiers of support. So as we move from the bottom of the triangle in tier one up to the top of the triangle in tier three, what's intensifying and how are we doing that? By getting more explicit and more systematic as we move across tiers of support. And we can do that through decreasing group size. We can do that by providing more opportunities for students to respond. We can do that by teaching and reteaching and providing more practice opportunities and more time for feedback for students as they move across those tiers of support. So in this diagram, it's really that student one and student two who are kind of the focus for this particular diagram, looking at how in tier one, those two students are two of 26 students. And then as they move to tier two, they're two of five students, so more opportunities to practice, more opportunities to respond, more opportunities for teaching and reteaching. And then as they move into that tier three support, those are the only two students in that particular group, really looking at how can we hone in on skills and really focus on up to three essential skills for components of reading is what the research suggests as we're honing in more on providing instruction for students. You do have these in your handouts as well. Again, I'm not going to read these to you either, but it does look at your tier two and tier three curriculum. And then what are some evidence-based practices for tier two and tier three? So this is in your handouts for your slides as a resource to look back through and think about what your curriculum in those tiers looks like and what do your evidence-based practices across tiers of support look like to support students with intensifying instruction. Looking at how we know to start, we have looking at prior to adjusting any instruction, ensuring our curriculum that we're using for students is being implemented. Going back to that checklist that we did at the beginning of this webinar together, really checking for implementation. Are we teaching these skills in our classrooms and our tiers for students during this code-based instruction portion of their instruction? Using data, considering areas to intensify, developing a plan, and then implementing the plan that we have established for intensifying instruction for students. And really noting the connection between data and your instructional decisions. So one doesn't happen without the other. I'm not adjusting instruction without having data, and I'm not gathering data without using it to inform instruction. So really thinking about how those are connected across those tiers of support as we're making instructional decisions for students. These are just a few samples of what data you may be collecting. Also to note, if the data that you're collecting isn't showing you how students are doing with foundational reading skills for code-based instruction, you might need to collect different data. So thinking about what data sources are you using, and is it providing you the data that you need to inform instructional decisions around code-based teaching and learning in your building? So examples of things that would potentially gather that data, looking at progress monitoring data, lesson mastery data as you're teaching code-based skills in your classrooms or in your schools, and then any screening or diagnostic tools that you may be using to gauge where students are in the learning of code-based skills. NCII, the National Center on Intensive Intervention, has a database individualization cycle and process to kind of go through as you're looking to tailor instruction to meet students' needs. So it's a great resource for you to refer to as you're looking at tying data and instruction together to inform instruction and code-based skills. And then considering areas to intensify is kind of that second. We've gathered our data, we've analyzed our data. Now how can we intensify? Again, NCII has a great resource for this as well. Lots of web tools, so looking at infographics and modules and videos and things that you can use for professional learning as you're looking to intensify instruction for students and really using a systematic approach in doing that. So this is a tool to use for that intensifying instruction and some questions to consider as you're looking to intensify instruction for students. So things about group size, things about the way instruction is delivered. Does the instruction match the need based on data? Are students really looking at how to transfer and generalize the skills that they're learning in tier two to what they're doing in tier one? And helping students navigate across those tiers of support to build those code-based skills. And then the last part of that is planning and implementing, and NCII has resources for that too, to really look at as part of your school-based teams and your leadership and as folks are intensifying instruction for students, how can we plan and implement that instruction for students to support them in the learning? Lauren's mentioned already the framework navigator that we have that you're able to access either in your handouts or on the Lead for Literacy website. The REL has us, which is the REL guide. We looked at a resource from them earlier. There's a self-study guide looking at your readiness for implementing intensive interventions. This one's a little bit more of an in-depth look. So the framework navigator will provide you kind of an overall picture if you're ready to really dive deep in intensive instruction. The REL tool really does take a deep dive looking at implementing early literacy interventions for students. And then I'll pause here thinking about some key questions that you may have. What are some current strengths in your building? What are some areas that you could kind of stretch in growth in your building? And then looking at where are some next steps to move the work forward as you're looking to implement code-based learning in your building for your students. That brings us to our wrap-up, and I'm going to go ahead and put the survey link here. So you're able to jump to the survey link using the QR code or the session survey link that will be in the chat box. And then I'm going to just kind of open it up. If Lauren has any other questions that you have, we'll go ahead and get those answered as we're kind of wrapping up and coming to a close with our time together today.
Great. Thank you, Jess. Yeah, we had a couple questions come into the Q&A. I put a couple of answers, but would definitely really love your take on them as well. So one of them asks about identifying and using a phonic scope and sequence as an essential aspect of systematic instruction. I did put in the NCII literacy framework because that talks a little bit about, in general with reading, how to consider some aspects of explicit systematic instruction, but was wondering if you had anything else to add.
It definitely is an important part, right? As far as we're looking at, and I know that was the question, would that be important to really look at a scope and sequence? Yeah. And yes, definitely scope and sequence is a pretty critical aspect when we're thinking about teaching reading to students. So as you're looking at programs and you're looking at resources for this, seeing if there is a scope and sequence as part of that instructional system. And I do think that resource that you put in, Lauren, is a great one to kind of help guide that work for sure.
Right. And related, we were asked a question about any tips on teaching tricky words. Again, I think that the NCII resource can help with that. And also kind of for both questions, the Florida Center for Reading Research has a number of activities related to supporting children's code-based skills in centers, and they definitely could be modified too for like a virtual context. So put that link in. But if you have other, Jess, any other ideas related to more of the trickier words?
Yeah, and I think part of that too is what's making them tricky, right? So is it that they're not following a specific sound spelling pattern? For example, like a word like said. So then are there parts of that could be decoded, the S and the D, if students know those learning patterns, but that AI really does need to be taught a little more explicit and systematically because it's just not following rules. Or are they more tricky because they're multisyllabic? And then looking at if there are those words that are multisyllabic, peeling those layers apart and showing students how to decode at the syllable level and then blend those syllables together to read the words. So within that tricky words, trying to dive down and drill on a little more on where's the tricky part and adjusting instruction based on that.
Great. And I see in the chat too, there's some resources folks are putting in related to some of the scope and sequences with phonics. So great. Great. Well, I think those are all of the questions. If there's any that come up, our contact information is in the resources, and please don't hesitate to reach out. We often get emails from participants and really like to stay in touch. That's part of, some of our services. So, as you're engaging with instruction or working with your school teams, if questions come up about any of the tools that we talk through or resources or concepts, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. And I just wanted to remind everybody, again, there's the survey link and it will also be sent out after the webinar. If it's possible to fill it out, it just takes a couple of minutes and it really, really helps our team ensure that these sessions are meaningful for everybody. And I want to remind everybody that we have sort of a part two session coming up next week on April 1st, where we will be looking more specifically at components around the meaning-based skills. So we talked a lot about word recognition and sight words today. We'll be talking next week more about comprehension, promoting oral language proficiency and vocabulary and the strategies with that. So great. With that, we'll turn it back over to Gracie and Honor at NAASP. And thank you so much, everybody. We know it's a very busy time and thank you to Jess for presenting and everyone for engaging and attending today's session.
Well, I just want to thank you both again, Jess and Lauren, for your presentation today. I'm glad that you reminded everyone that we do have another webinar scheduled next week on April the 1st. And just so appreciate our partnership with the Lead for Literacy Center. So thank everyone. Thank you for being with us. And thank you, Jess and Lauren.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks for being here.